We're in the Renaissance Beverly Hills Hotel about to talk to Miles Spencer, who's just written Money Hunt, 27 Rules for Creating and Growing a Breakaway Business. Welcome to the booksite.net.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
I thought it might be useful to approach your general theories about entrepreneurship by starting out with your own entrepreneurial experience and how you've managed to create Money Hunt the book, the TV show, and the website, and what the relationship of those different media are.
A twisting, winding road. Business Money Hunt was actually started by two major events, somewhat minor at the time, that happened. Cliff Enico, the co-host of the show and co-founder and co-author of the book, and I were giving speeches in an effort to drum up business. I, for my venture capital activities, and Cliff for his law practice. And we just had a bang-up time in one presentation, and someone raised their hand and said, gee, why don't you folks do a television show? Well, we had never done a television show before, so we said poo-poo to that, and then couldn't sleep that night and couldn't sleep the next night. So we spent some time in thinking about how we could create a television show. About that time, I was also a new investor in a venture capital fund called Capital Express in Scenic, Secaucus, New Jersey. And we were sitting around the table saying, hey, how are we going to market ourselves? How are we going to reach the entrepreneurial community? And I mentioned that this person had raised their hand and suggested we did a TV show. And I think that particular night with my partners, we probably had too little pizza and too much beer. And we decided rather than printing a brochure, we'd do a television show. Push comes to shove. Within 2 years, we've gone from a little cable access show in Norwalk, Connecticut, to national distribution with 110 stations for our television show, Money Hunt. We've added book publishing, a website that gets 8,000 to 10,000 new users in our user base a week. Radio launches in January. We've licensed the television show to 5 countries overseas, and we're spinning off another television show shortly. So we think we're at the beginning of our journey, but it's been exciting up to now.
What lessons that you teach in the book did you learn starting out?
I probably learned all 27 rules 27 times each. You know, there are a few of my favorites. One bidder makes a short auction. That's Money Hunt rule number 21. And it has to do with, once you're up and running with the business, oftentimes you'll look to finance it or indeed maybe sell it. If you've ever been to an auction house, you'll notice that if there's only one bidder for an object, the price pretty much stays the same. But if there's two or three, all of a sudden the prices start rising, the buyers start thinking, gee, there's someone else involved and interested in this, I should go higher. And if you're able to orchestrate an auction and run it with integrity and not abuse the process, you come out very well in the end. And indeed, as Money Hunt has begun to grow and bring in partners and add more layers of financing, we've always made it a point to make sure we always had more than one bidder raising their hand for us.
I was listening to, I think it was NPR this morning, and Guy Kawasaki, who runs Garage.com and was important in the early days of Apple, was making the point that today's startups aren't really the kind that produce shrink-wrapped products to be sent out, but are really more the kind that provide e-commerce services and other related more intangible things. Is that about right, and does that fit in with your understanding?
I'd echo those remarks, as so many of the hot companies today are in the dot-com and e-commerce space. They're taking existing products and moving them in new ways. But my background and activities have also been in the real world of whether it's sporting goods or pet products. There continues to be a wonderful amount of new developments in a lot of different industries. Now they have the advantages of moving those products around in different ways and accessing customers in different ways. So the dot-com boom, I think, is going to last for many, many years, but it indeed will settle out, and a new wave of innovation will continue to hit, where we're going to have better and better shrink-wrapped products, but they'll be moving through much more efficient pipes.
Speaking of figuring out figuring out what the product is. Do you advise people to follow their bliss in terms of products and sort of get involved with something that they're really interested in personally? Or do you think it makes more sense to survey the market, see what products are not being delivered but have a demand for them, and move in that direction?
Well, if you have the advantage of developing a product that serves an industry that you've been working in for the last many years, maybe have contacts, connections, can make first sales in, you're always going to have a tremendous advantage. Also, when you raise funds in a business where you have a background, they're going to have more confidence in your ability to do just those things that I just mentioned. However, today, there are so many new industries being created where people obviously have no background, but you're groping around in the dark. The only comforting factor you have there is everyone else is groping around in the dark at the same time.
Do you generally feel that intuition or spreadsheets is a better way to calculate what the opportunities are?
It's a nice way to ask that question. I love gut feelings and gut reactions, and more times than not, a first blush look at an opportunity and a gut reaction on the positive side is going to get me moving in that direction. But movement doesn't necessarily mean closure. At the end of the day, spreadsheets and proving out the financial model after the gut has been confirmed it's the only time that things actually come through and become real. So gut gets you moving in one direction. You need to make sure the numbers prove out.
People, including you, talk a lot about what it takes to write a business plan to impress venture capitalists and convince them to give you money. Say a little bit about what makes a good venture capitalist.
I think luck has a big part of it, no doubt. Good venture capitalists need to have a very specific and distinct understanding of what their criteria is and communicate that to the marketplace. For instance, there's a lot of venture capitalists out there that are generalists and will look as opportunists at anything that comes down the pike. Well, that can be very confusing in terms of entrepreneurs coming to their doors. They'll have to say no so many more times before they get something that actually works for them. If they can be specific with their criteria and stick to it, they'll have less deal flow, but it'll be on criteria deal flow. It's less time wasted for everybody around, and the internet is empowering that. On our website, www.moneyhunt.com, we have a network mechanism where both investors and entrepreneurs can learn about each other and understand that criteria, so you're not sending a blue type of company proposal to a red type of company venture capital firm. That information gap is closing because the internet's becoming much more efficient.
Speaking of more efficient, it seems that what all of your projects are really designed to do is to increase the efficiency in the venture capital market or the business plan market, so that, as you were just saying, the venture capitalists and the entrepreneurs have a better idea about what's involved with each and what the market in venture capital placements is, so that it can function more efficiently through the internet and through personal networking.
Well expressed. We like to say that Money Hunt is actually rapidly becoming a global brand that expresses the challenges and the rewards of being an entrepreneur. So we're not just there for the venture financed type of companies, but we're there for everybody that wants to start a business, everybody that wants to fire their boss, take that little project they've been working at in their spare bedroom, go down, incorporate, start to bring on some partners, possibly raise some money, and take those first steps. And the products and services that we deliver, whether it's through television, internet, radio, books, broadband, they're all designed to allow entrepreneurs to take that first step and then continue growing to the point where they reach that pinnacle of success. They're a company that can be financed at a venture level and eventually an IPO. So we cover the entire spectrum at Money Hunt, and we'll continue to add products that help entrepreneurs at every level.
We're just a few blocks from 20th Century Fox Studios and Century City, that was their back lot once. Here in Hollywood, the entrepreneur entrepreneur is a screenwriter who writes scripts, but 1 in 1,000 written scripts gets produced. What's the comparable ratio in the venture capital world?
Scary, but one might think that the scriptwriters have better chances than entrepreneurs. 80% of new businesses fail in the first year. 10% fail the second, 5 the third. So you get 5 left standing. One would wonder why anybody would face such daunting odds, just like in the screenwriting business. But the reality is the challenges that invigorate in being an entrepreneur and the rewards that enrich of being an entrepreneur are two tremendously compelling reasons to go into business for yourself. And that's why so many Americans are either doing it or dreaming about it.
So it's high risk but high reward. So the when you multiply the two, you get a reasonable level of why you should do it. Is there a formula, would you say, to writing a successful business plan or organizing a new startup business?
Well, I don't know if there's a formula. There's certainly some starting points. I mean, I've raised tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars for growing companies and also now invested in them myself. And each time I began with a business plan. And what I've done over the last 10 years is taken the templates that I've used and posted them on our website. And you click on business plan downloads and you can download templates from a variety of industries, which are really ticklers for an entrepreneur to begin writing a business plan. You're not going to be able to fill in the blanks with this is my business name and this is the address and have anything that's the least bit saleable. But hopefully the template that I've designed and been successful in raising money with can help you in getting that start. That business plan is crucial if you're going to pitch from any of the three major sources of capital out there.
To go for another Hollywood analogy, there's a book that if used properly, can produce thousands of plots. It takes a certain context and certain characters, and then runs it through a formula, and out comes the plot for that. Would it be possible to do a content analysis of the last 1,000 successful business plans and see what the elements are, and then re-aggregate them in some novel fashion and have a good business plan?
Well, indeed, in a way, it's just been done. I believe I'm familiar with the book, but I'm not going to get the author from the Hollywood side. But on the entrepreneur side, we have seen at Money Hunt and in my venture capital fund, Capital Express, literally tens of thousands of business plans. And when you see that many, you begin to see patterns emerge. And you begin to understand what the differences are between the successes and the failures, and those differences are razor thin. So we boil down those differences and those ideas into 27 rules that we thought were crucial to starting and growing a business. And those rules are backed up by actual stories of entrepreneurs that have wonderful twisting plots, just like the best scripts here in Hollywood. And they don't all come out at the end with a cowboy riding into the sunset. Several of the stories in the book are horrible nuclear disasters in an economic sense. But those two teach entrepreneurs what to avoid, what to capitalize on in order to be successful.
Well, in what I hope will be the last Hollywood analogy of this interview, actors make and directors and other creative people make choices. They're at a certain point, they cry, they laugh, they walk to the left, they walk to the right. Presumably, there are similar choices that have to be made by an entrepreneur doing a startup, saying which market they go into. Do they want to start small or go larger right away? Are they going to pick an experienced person or younger, more creative people or older, more creative people? Is there a useful analogy there, and is that a good way to approach how to make your decisions when you're starting a business?
I do have one. It's in the form of a rule in the book. I believe it's rule number 7, and that has to do with what business to get into and responding to the marketplace. It's called, when people call you a donkey, grab a saddle. And basically what it means, and there's a wonderful story, a touching story in there, is entrepreneurs sometimes try to lean towards something that they've made up their in their dream of dreams, what they'd like to be as an entrepreneur. But the market may be telling them something totally different. Well, Cliff's grandmother, he used to tell the story about a little kid that would often get ridiculed about being so large a young child, and rather than cry about it, after a while he literally started charging for giving rides on his shoulders, because he was the only one that could carry three or four kids around his shoulders. So the rule is, and it's illustrated by an entrepreneurial story as well, the rule is, when people are calling you a donkey, grab a saddle.
Are there temperaments among people and their personality types that are more conducive to entrepreneurship than others?
I would say there is a cross section of types of people that can be successful as an entrepreneur, but one of the things that I see inherent in everyone that's been successful that I've known is a fire in the belly and a belief in themselves, their product, and their company that is virtually unshakable. On our television show, you have entrepreneurs coming on live for a national audience, no cuts, no takes, no stopping, cameras rolling, and a staff of production staff of 40 people running around like it's the deck of an aircraft carrier. These folks have never been on television before. They know their pitch, but when the cameras go on, they are suddenly shocked into an ice water of terror. And it is only, I submit, it is only their belief in themselves and their product and their company that gets them through a very difficult 8 minutes with me and Cliff and the expert. So having that fire in the belly is the one thing that seems to run consistent with so many of the so many of the successful entrepreneurs I've been associated with.
We've mainly been talking about more or less high-tech companies here in the United States with large investments and big IPOs. There's another movement that's mainly in the third world, although it has some applications in the U.S., for mini loans or micro loans that are given to mini entrepreneurs, people who are running a tortilla stand somewhere and for whom $400 would mean they could go to the next level and the next level and the next level of infrastructure for themselves. Are there lessons in what you're talking about in Money Hunt that might be useful in that movement of micro capitalism?
Well, yeah, I think the lessons apply across all. And what's one of the things we strive to do in our television show and in our book and all of our properties is to portray entrepreneurship and its challenges and rewards on a fairly sophisticated basis, where those that want to be an entrepreneur can aspire to that higher level, but the real entrepreneurs can also appreciate it for the sophistication that we bring. When you refer to the entrepreneurial movements overseas, we have picked up on that as well at Money Hunt. We've now licensed the program and its format in 5 different countries and expect to be in some 20 in the next 2 years, because so many entrepreneurs overseas want to learn about how American entrepreneurs are successful and what is new and what's going on, and Money Hunt provides a tremendous window on that world.
We've mainly been talking about the startup phase of a business, and we have a certain amount of time left, but not that much. Say a little bit about the building of the business and some of the things to always include and some of the things to avoid during that stage of the business.
Well, there are 2 good rules that I can send people off on when they're getting to that holy grail of exit strategy. And one of them is this concept of rule number 25. It's a business, not a baby. And it's a wonderful story in there. I'll summarize it quickly by saying, as an entrepreneur that realized it was time for him to get out, and rather than coddle the business because he had created it, he treated it as a business rather than a baby and sold it to somebody for an attractive price rather than threat. The threat of being crushed by that same acquirer had he acquired the number two and come back and got him. The second one is my favorite rule. It's Money Hunt rule number 27. And the name of that rule is shoot ducks when they're flying. So many entrepreneurs need to realize that opportunity only comes their way at selected times. And while the sky is empty, you're never going to shoot any ducks, no matter how prepared you are. My brother was a duck hunter, and I spent some time in duck blinds. But when opportunity passes overhead, i.e. a duck, entrepreneurs need to be able to reprioritize what they're doing and put every single round of ammunition up into the air that they can, because the only time to bring down ducks is when they're flying, ducks being opportunity, and your ammunition is your pitch.
We've been sort of peripherally relating to high technology throughout this interview, but maybe you could focus here on sort of two aspects. One, how entrepreneurship is improving and intensifying the power of high technology. And secondly, how the constant evolution of high technology tools is impacting the entrepreneurship movement and formation of new companies generally.
Well, I think, you know, high technology shouldn't be vernacular that scares entrepreneurs or wannabes out there that don't think they're in that space. Everybody today is talking about being a dot-com company, and I think it's going to become so ubiquitous that it may be akin to 70 years ago when people would ask if you were a business that used the telephone. Well, if you ask that question today, you'd roll your eyes and say, well, yes, of course. Well, in a few years, I feel that most businesses will be using the internet just as commonly as they're using the telephone, and frankly, using technology as just another tool to allow their products to become developed faster, sounder, moved through to their end customer, and more efficiently, and get feedback from them. Yes, technology is fueling the entrepreneurial revolution today, but at the end of the day, caller from Dallas, Texas mentioned to me yesterday, he says, boy, is anybody making anything anymore? You know, where's the Popeil's pocket fisherman? I just want to see real products that I can touch, and all you guys talk about is dot-com this and dot-com that and things that are moving around in the internet. And that was a heck of a way to end an interview, but I thought about it for a minute. And I realized, I said, you know, why don't we look at our economy in 5 years, and why don't you give me a call back? And why don't we talk about how technology and the internet has affected business? And I think I'm going to come out on the plus side of that, and you're going to get your Popeil pocket fisherman developed a lot quicker, moved to you a lot faster, and probably for a lower price. He was pretty happy about that.
In fact, I'm not familiar with that product you mentioned, but I imagine it's about the same size and shape as a cellular phone is now, and it's that actual piece of hardware that will be providing access to the entire universe of internet services and products. You've been in this business since about 96, I guess. Is that about right?
That's correct.
In the 3 years past, what have been the main changes, or how has the startup business been evolving? And if you could project that, say, 3 years ahead, what are you expecting to be the main changes in that period?
Well, I think the changes since 1996, I mean, frankly, I came from Wall Street in the 80s, and that was like the Neanderthal time compared to now. As we mentioned, technology is moving things much more quicker, and the access to information on a real-time, immediate basis makes much more informed decisions. I guess I'll draw an analogy to a typical deal in my old business, which was investment banking. I set somewhat of a record for a financing I did back in the late 80s, early 90s, for an inline skate replacement wheel company. That's regular company, real type of shrink-wrapped product. And I was able to complete the deal in 26 days. And that made the news. It certainly made the client very, very happy. It was unheard of. Normally a deal like that would take 90 or 180 days. Well, we just closed a financing for a round ourselves recently, and from term sheet to closing, that took 17, and it was pretty much the average. Information travels much faster. People are able to do their homework or due diligence much quicker. And so the speed, you used to get a proposal and say, well, let me think about that. Nowadays, you have just about until you hang up the phone to make up your mind, because thinking about it means that the marketplace can change dramatically and you can be a victim of speed rather than a master. And that is one of the keys to being a successful entrepreneur.
Do you think there's any limit to the time collapse that's possible in this area?
Well, I don't think I'm going to close a deal anything close to within a day of receiving a term sheet from somebody. I don't see too much left there. I think the efficiencies have been worked into the marketplace from the financing standpoint, and that's largely because of the internet and the way we can move information around much quickly. I mean, not too many years ago, the fax machine was a major innovation, and we all thought FedEx would go out of business, and that moved the deal business along extremely quickly. Could we close a deal in a day? I think it's feasible, but compressing it beyond that, I'd never get any sleep.
In a 24-hour global market. Say a little bit about who to hire in your new company.
Well, there's a rule for you. I think it's number 7. When looking for key managers and key partners, the worst place to look is in a mirror. Now, we're so comfortable with who we are familiar with. The people we hang out with, the people we have over for barbecues, are friends. And familiarity is not necessarily a good thing when looking for a partner. Having someone with a different frame of mind, different context, a diverse view of any individual situation, and indeed a skill set that's different than yours, is crucial to building a well-rounded business plan. So falling into the trap of looking for a partner in the mirror can be an absolute death knell, and it's one that you really need to avoid. I have a wonderful story in the book that illustrates that, and I think they'll enjoy reading that.
The three letters IPO are pretty central to this whole operation. Tell our listeners who don't know what it is, and our listeners who do, what's so important about it, and what advice you provide in The Money Hunt about it.
Well, those three magical words are the holy grail of entrepreneurship. Initial public offering is the time in which you finally are able to market your stock to the public and have a publicly traded security, which you can go and look up in your newspaper or go to excite.com and look up what your stock is trading for today. Without an IPO, there's no public market. Typically, there's no public market for a stock. Now, how do we get to this hallowed ground of an IPO? Well, the road is extremely long, full of Claymore mines and everything else on the way. And we have a saying, a column that I recently wrote called, I now have shareholders, I now have a board, I now am public, I now am miserable. There is a tremendous amount of responsibility that goes with being a public company, and it simply is not for everyone. It's hard to turn down those seemingly huge valuations and huge run-ups in stock price that one hears about all the time. But that takes an inordinate amount of work, tremendous amount of responsibility, and a little bit of luck. There's plenty of money to be made along the way in creating businesses, making a living for yourself, possibly creating some wealth for your shareholders, even on a private basis, simply through making good old-fashioned profits or eventually selling out to either a larger company or possibly one of those public companies.
Next to the last question, what are the greatest satisfactions that you get from your work?
Very easy. Every single time a business plan is downloaded from our website, I know that I've helped launch yet another business, and we're closing in on now 1 million of those that we've helped launch through Money Hunt. It goes back to that hand that was raised at a speech that Cliff and I gave some 2.5-3 years ago. We were in a room of a couple hundred people, and I gather those couple hundred people appreciated what we had to say. But because that one man raised his hand and suggested we do television and other mass media, we've been able to help on the TV alone an average of 1 million viewers an episode who can learn from the mistakes of other entrepreneurs and learn from the questions and the advice of the experts without having ever gotten their fingers burnt themselves. So being able to help entrepreneurs take that first step and understand the challenges and rewards of entrepreneurship is by far the most satisfying thing I do.
So in fact, you're not just creating a more perfect market in capital, you're creating a more perfect market in information, which is, when added to the capital, is what makes these businesses work. Underneath this interview on the booksite .net will be a link to your site. Can people hear you read it for them now?
Well, that I'd be happy to, and I'll give my sign offline as well. My name is Miles Spencer, and I want to help you start a business. You can find me and all that information at www.moneyhunt.com.
Well, thank you and all the media that you're in for talking to us today about the Money Hunt and the work behind it. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you.